This episode of The Gender Knot is sponsored by Casper, who makes state-of-the-art mattresses at affordable prices.
Whenever you do call someone out and you actually point at them and you say this person has done something wrong, you know that by making that very individualised call that you're pushing yourself in a position where they might bite back. So I think if you're going to call someone out, then you have to be prepared to take it when they respond badly.
This is The Gender Knot, the podcast where we untangle the new masculinity and femininity. I'm Naz, or Nastaran Tavakoli Farr, and you just heard Eleanor Mills, who's the editor of The Sunday Times magazine. We're going to be speaking to her about women journalists calling people out, and there's a few more items in today's show. We're super excited, so let's jump in. Okay, so three parts to today's episode. First up, we're talking to Eleanor Mills about whether women journalists can call people out. This follows on from our episode 2 weeks ago on the fallout to Hillary Clinton's book. In part two of the show, we're going to be looking at some transgender terminology. Recently, we had an episode on clothing and gender identity, and it appears I got a few things wrong, so we're going to delve into that. And in the third and final part, we're going to give a shout out to two fantastic podcasts that you have to check out. One is The Ministry of Ideas, and the other is Badass Women's Hour. More on those later. But first, a word from our sponsor, Casper, who make finely engineered mattresses at affordable prices. Now, I'm sure you're aware of the importance of a good night's sleep. I personally think that at least half of the ridiculous things I do in life are the result of a bad night's sleep, be that writing a lousy script all the way to getting into a pointless argument because I'm in a foul mood because I just haven't slept properly. So if you want to take over the world, or if you want to be a better person, or perhaps a little bit of both, head over to Casper.com and order one of their state-of-the-art yet affordable mattresses. That's Casper.com. They're so affordable because they sell directly to customers. There are no middlemen involved. You can get £55 off any mattress purchase by using the promo code KNOT at the checkout. That's K-N-O-T. Terms and conditions do apply. Shipping and returns are free within the UK. And what's more, you can have a 100-night free trial. You can test it out, see how you find it, and if you're not happy, you can get your money back. Remember, that's Casper.com, and the promo code is KNOT, K-N-O-T. That's K for King, N for November, O for Orange, and T for Tango. Okay, back to the Gender Knot. Part 1. Can women journalists call people out? So, 2 weeks ago we asked if women politicians can call people out. This was after a lot of backlash and reaction to Hillary Clinton's book, What Happened, where she talks about the 2016 US presidential election. She names people who she thinks helped to cost her the election. And, let's be fair, she takes a lot of responsibility for it all too. I want us to not forget that. But anyway, so we looked at women politicians and whether they can call people out. We decided that this topic of women calling people out is a big deal in general, and especially right now, and it's also super pertinent to our own profession, that being journalism. So we wanted to do a follow-up with a journalist. Now, this is important because a large part of being a journalist is all about this, speaking truth to power, not letting people in charge get away with things, pointing out things that everyone else complains about but that a lot of people don't have the courage, or, let's face it, the privilege to call out publicly. I'd say a lot of journalists go into the profession because there's this real drive to uphold justice and to make the world a better place. There is an idealism to it, no matter how grouchy and cynical a lot of us are on the surface. A fellow journalist friend of mine calls us broken idealists, which I think is a pretty perfect description. Now, this isn't some esoteric or theoretical topic we're going to discuss either, because it's especially pertinent to what's going on in the world right now. So just off the top of my head, I'm thinking of Brexit, Donald Trump, sexism in Silicon Valley, rising populism and nationalism across Europe, and journalists are busy doing a lot of calling people out and trying to uphold justice and to understand really complicated and sensitive issues. And I am super proud of our profession right now. But any woman journalist will tell you the high costs of being a woman who speaks out, or even a woman who just speaks. And the result of women journalists simply doing their jobs includes things such as getting death threats, getting rape threats, online harassment and vicious personal attacks through social media, gender-based trolling. The BBC's political editor, Laura Koonsberg, has been especially badly attacked online. And as a result, she was even given bodyguards at the recent Labour Party conference a few weeks ago. It's crazy that things would get to such a level of threat that she needs to have a bodyguard. So this isn't just some theoretical thing, but it's real and it's dangerous and it's scary. Also, I find the UK has a pretty adversarial journalistic culture, which is full of rather bad-tempered men aggressively calling people out. Jeremy Paxman and John Humphreys are the main examples that come to mind, but it's just such a thing in the journalistic culture here. You know, men who are very attacking even. And I don't think that that's always bad either. I mean, it's great when they're trying to make sure that a government minister doesn't dodge a question, and sometimes it's not so great, you know, when they're insensitive and bullying to members of the public for no reason. I really dislike it when that happens. But my point is that this is a real thing in journalism here, calling people out in a very blatant and sometimes even aggressive way. And I can't think of many women like that. I mean, maybe a few columnists come to mind, but even with them, I don't think women are allowed to call people out in the same way, to be honest. So we thought we should give a quick look at women journalists and whether they can call people out. We spoke to Eleanor Mills. She's the editor of the Sunday Times magazine and is also the chair of Women in Journalism. She's also the host of the Sunday Times magazine podcast, which delves into the behind the scenes of the magazine and its reporting. So basically, she is the perfect person for us to untangle this question with. Co-producer Katie and I went to her office to have a chat. By the way, I've just finished reading Hillary Clinton's book on my phone, and I pull up a passage from it during our conversation. Okay, here it goes.
Can women call people out?
Absolutely, and they should. I think sometimes they feel a bit reluctant to do so, or they get criticised more than men when they do, but that shouldn't mean that they shouldn't.
How's it gone down for you when you've tried to call people out, either in person or in your writing?
Oh, well, you always, whenever you do call someone out and you actually point at them and you say this person has done something wrong, you know that by making that very individualized call that you're pushing yourself in a position where they might bite back. So I think if you're going to call someone out, then you have to be prepared to take it when they respond badly, you know, in the same way that if you're going to be rude to somebody in the same room, you might expect that they would turn around and maybe be a bit rude back to you. So I think if you're going to do it, particularly as a columnist, you have to be prepared to, you shouldn't dish out what you can't take. And I think that there's some quite interesting cultural stuff around women and calling people out. I think that in the culture for thousands of years of patriarchy, women have been supposed to be kind of seen and not heard, to be the good person, to be the person who soothes down confrontation. Mothers' kind of roles are often to kind of pour kind of oil on choppy waters and try and kind of calm everything down. And I think that women often feel that they have to provide kind of social oil, or they make situations easier, or yeah, maybe it actually comes down to a physical thing of not wanting to get beaten up by somebody kind of bigger and larger than you. And actually, for a lot of evolution, it's probably been quite a good thing as a woman to be able to kind of calm things down so you don't get hurt. But if we're really in an age of equality, then women should be able to stand up for themselves, call out what they don't like, and make people justify themselves. But as a woman who does, you often get kind of tall poppy syndrome and you get attacked for it. I know that, you know, for instance, I often appear in the pages of Private Eye, not really because I've done anything particular, but just because I happen to be a woman and I'm chair of Women in Journalism, and so they like to have a bit of a pop at me. And I think if you're a larger than life character as a woman, you often cop a bit of that as well, because the culture's not really used to it, it's not set up for it, it's not what they're expecting women to be.
Are there times when you think it actually benefits someone being a woman and calling people out? Like, are there things that you can get away with as a woman you think male journalists can't?
I think sometimes you can do it in quite a charming way. For instance, yesterday I was at the Conservative Party conference and I was speaking on a panel about housing, and it was quite a dry panel. There was the housing minister and there was someone who runs kind of Jones Lang LaSalle, which is a big kind of property company, and they were all kind of quite worthy. And I, as the kind of only woman on the panel, I just kind of stretched it back and I went, hang on, when we're talking about housing, we're talking about people's lives. It's where they live, it's how they set up their lives, and the downside of getting this, you know, wrong is massive. So Grenfell Tower when you don't pay for the right cladding because you're putting profit ahead of people. People die. I said this in front of the minister and I could see him looking absolutely appalled. And I think if I was a man, he probably would have come back at me very strongly. But he said something like, oh, I didn't think Eleanor was going to be so kind of passionate about this or something. And so I think sometimes as women, you can get away with a bit more passion, a bit more feeling, a bit more vim, going in a bit harder because men are often a bit surprised that you have.
Do you think it works better on certain topics than others? Because when you say housing, I know it's a bit cliche, but you think, oh, women, the home, community, family. Like, do you think if you're talking about, I don't know, policy or something a bit more
crunchy? Kind of,
yeah.
Well, this was really crunchy, so it was really okay. About where do we build houses. You know, it was the Prime Minister's new white paper on housing. So mm-hmm. they were making it very dry. Mm-hmm. And I was saying, no, this is about people and it matters in terms of their actual lives and how they set them up and what goes on. It's not just something dry. So I think you can call them out in that way. I'm trying to think of another instance.
But that's interesting because, again, it's the people thing. And I wonder if it's because, like, I guess women are the nurturing
exactly. Well, so I think it's, again, you're meant to be seen as somebody who's maybe kind of, you know, building people up or being nice, not ripping down consensus. And I think that when women do that, although there's quite a good, particularly in the UK, there's quite a good tradition of female kind of polemicists and women who really have a go. I mean, I used to love Julie Burchill when I was younger because she would kind of really go for it. Or somebody like Sarah Vine on The Mail, even if you don't particularly like what she says, she's pretty out there. But then I think that maybe they sometimes get away with less than the men do. So Katie Hopkins, I mean, she wrote a pretty appalling column, didn't she, about refugees being like cockroaches. Mm-hmm. But I can't help wondering whether there are some other pretty frantic right-wing male columnists who probably wouldn't have got into quite as much trouble as she does, or somebody like Jeremy Clarkson, who dishes it out all the time, or our late A.A. Gill on the Sunday Times magazine, who used to be he used to be really rude about Welsh people or completely diss whole populations. And yes, he got into a bit of trouble for that, but it was kind of known that that was what he did. I think when women do that, there is a kind of, wow, you know, she's a bitch, you know, that kind of thing, or being kind of horrible. Camilla Long can be very rude and cutting. But you have to be a bit careful about doing that as a journalist, because if you're an interviewer like Camilla is, Camilla's interviews are often brilliant, but I wouldn't necessarily want to be interviewed by Camilla, because even when she thinks she's being nice, it's pretty harsh, you know. So there's a kind of... I do think when women do it, people really notice. Or Lynn Barber, who writes for me a lot on the magazine, Demon Barber of Fleet Street. I mean, if you do it as a woman, you certainly make a name for yourself. Mm-hmm. But I think there's also a danger that the media quite likes a woman having a go at another woman. I think if you're going to call people out or be kind of stroppy about it, it's very important to do that to men, not just to have women kind of picking fights with other women about kind of women's things. Because I certainly know... The men in charge love nothing more than two women having a go at each other. And it's amazing how often you go on media programmes and they try and set you up, kind of one, a woman against a woman to kind of slug it out.
You know, there's a bit, I'm just going to pull it up, there's a bit in Hillary Clinton's book where she says just this. She says, God forbid two women have a disagreement in public. Then it's a cat fight.
Exactly. And the cat fight is a real staple of the media, I think. So it's often set up so that, you know, so you'll be a woman kind of having a go at another woman. Or, the Sarah Vine, again, the Daily Mail loves nothing more than kind of women calling other women out. And I think you have to be a bit careful. I think you have to be a bit careful about that.
I don't know if this has happened for you, but does it make it hard calling out another woman? Like, you feel like, ooh, I don't want it to look like...
Well, I got into quite a lot of trouble with various friends of mine. I did an interview with Dawn French recently, in which she went on quite a rant. I was quite surprised during the interview. She went on this whole rant about kind of ladettes and women who kind of sleep with people like men do, and kind of, you know, staggering out of bushes kind of with semen dribbling down their legs and saying, this isn't what the kind of suffragettes threw themselves in front of horses for, and, you know, is this what feminism's supposed to look like? And I said to her in the interview, well, Germaine Greer always said the sexual revolution was never going to be pretty, and that if you really are going to give women those rights, then, you know, yes, they probably will kind of behave in that way, and you have to kind of expect that. So I thought there was a bit of a double standard going on. But I thought it was interesting that she'd said it. And I kind of didn't really make much more of it in the interview, you, except to say something like, oh, she sounds like she's taking on a bit of the Vicar of Dibley's kind of moralising. And I kind of moved on. But for 3 days, it was on the top masthead puff of the Daily Mail. It was picked up by all those kind of women's magazines, things like Best and Grazia, and were going on about, should women be behaving like this? Because Dawn French had been slagging off other women for doing that, which is, I don't think she'd ever really intended to. She was kind of being funny. I think she went a bit far. So I think you do have to be careful, because anything like that can be massively kind of inflamed. And I think that there is a kind of trope within the media that they like a woman kind of being rude about another woman. It's a kind of, you know, it's a cat fight, it's a bitch fight. So I don't think you, as a woman columnist or whatever, you just want to be calling out other women for things. Mm-hmm. It becomes a bit like the kind of body shaming or the kind of, you know, look at this, look at that. So I think we have to be a bit more sisterly. I mean, one of the other things that Madeleine Albright said, not Hillary Clinton, is that there's a special circle of hell reserved for women who don't help other women. Uh-huh. And I think that that's true, that if you're a kind of woman who always gets ahead by trying to put other women down, that's not going to help.
But then it does make debate hard, because, like, at the end of the day, we're all people, right?
So yeah, and you might disagree with someone, so I think that's fine, but I just think you have to be aware of it. And I think that there's something around in the culture at the moment that if you do take issue with something that another woman said, other women can accuse you of being unsisterly. So I was having quite a big argument with a friend of mine. She was saying, oh, you know, you maybe shouldn't have put the stuff in that Dawn French said about the women. And I was like, well, no, it was a good story. But it wasn't like I kind of headed up the whole interview and slanted the whole piece around it. So I think it's about how you...
But that's the bit that got picked up.
Well, we picked up here the stuff about racism and about her and Lenny Henry's house being kind of firebombed and things like that, which I thought was more interesting. Mm-hmm. But the tabloids, interestingly, really went for the woman-on-woman attack. So I do think you have to be a bit careful about that. But I don't think that should stop women doing it if you really disapprove of someone. So I was on the radio the other day calling out Jacob Rees-Mogg on the abortion thing, which I have to say, every time I think about it, a kind of red mist descends. And I said that it smacks of The Handmaid's Tale, and it's kind of total patriarchy for men to want to control women's bodies, particularly their biology. It's not as if we've got abortion rights so set up and so kind of, you know, immutably untakeawayable that we can be messing around with that. And I really wouldn't want somebody held those views leading one of the political parties in this country. I think that's really scary. It's not very far away. And if you think the DUP, who are now in coalition with the government, are really anti-abortion, none of those rights that women have won are that really firmly entrenched. So I think we have to be very careful when people start pontificating in that way about what we should be doing with our bodies. I mean, the idea that a woman wouldn't be allowed an abortion even if she'd been raped, or if she had a really damaged fetus that she didn't want to then have to look after for the rest of her life, I just think that that goes completely against everything we think about our own lives and control over our own bodies and what we're allowed to do. So I called that out in no uncertain terms, and I got quite a lot of abuse for it on Twitter. I was told that I was being, you know, just as kind of totalitarian as he was. But I think that we have to make the things that you really care about, you have to stand up and be counted on, because if you're not, who's going to be?
But when that happens to women who work for you, what's the reaction? Do they ever come up to you and say, like, I don't know, I feel upset, I feel threatened, that I spoke up, I called someone out and I'm getting abuse?
I think they do, but I think as a kind of woman who speaks out, that's why I started off by saying you have to be prepared that you will get a backlash. I don't think that should stop you doing it. And actually, I think you get a backlash from people who don't like it, but the people who do like it really cheer you for it. So one of the things that I've been taking a bit of stick for over the last few weeks is we've just produced a report from Women in Journalism, which I chair, which looks at gender bias against women in newspapers, and also about who is actually writing the stories. And we found that there's been it was only 25% of bylines on the front page are female. That's only increased by 1.5% in the last 5 years. So we're not getting anywhere near parity soon. And I think that really matters, because I have this whole idea about what we call the male lens. So the media should be a true reflection of society. And if it isn't, because all the people who are calling the shots are a whole load of old blokes who are putting the front pages together, then you're not getting a true reflection. You're getting a distorted lens, which I think then really affects how, you know, maybe young women don't want to go into public life, or they feel like they're only going to be valued, you know, on their appearance. The thing I really singled out was this appalling thing, Lexit. You know, so when Nicola Sturgeon met Theresa May to talk about Brexit, the Daily Mail's headline was "Forget Brexit, it's all about Lexit, who's got the sexiest legs." It's like, these are the two most powerful people in the country, and they're being obsessed by who's got the better legs. And so it's kind of saying, however powerful you are, that's what you're going to be judged by. So as chair of Women and Journalism, I thought it was really important that we call that out and we name that and we describe why it happens and what the mechanism is by why that happens. Or they did another one which they called the Downing Street Catwalk, when a whole load of women were appointed to the cabinet, and it was all about what they were wearing. And I think that sends a terrible message to younger women about what you can be or what a woman is valued for. And it wasn't just those, we also looked at the kind of language that you get around cases. So there was a terrible murder case for a businessman who murdered his girlfriend, which was always described in the press as the tycoon and the escort girl. And nothing was said about the girl. She'd come from Eastern Europe, but you didn't find out anything about her. But it was all about, oh, the millionaire girl. He wasn't even a millionaire. He just had quite a nice house. He was a kind of small-time man, and he'd murdered this poor woman. So I think the way that society frames things and the media frames things, it's really important that we do call that out, and so we explain what's going on, so women don't necessarily feel that that's the way that they should be perceived, and they understand why it's being said in that way. But of course, when you do that, you get... you know, you do get a backlash about it. You get people saying you're wrong, or stop bleating, or, you know, it's always been tough, you know. I think it's very important to explain what's happening. When you do that, and I did that on Women's Eye yesterday in quite a passionate way, you get so much good support and validation from other women who are really pleased that you're doing it. And you also get a backlash from people who think, A, you shouldn't be talking about it at all. B, you know, shut up. You know, C, that's the way it's always been. You know, so you have to be prepared if you're going to stand up about anything that you'll get a pushback.
On the example you just gave, I wonder, does it sometimes help if you have a man do the calling out about an issue like this? Because also we've done an episode on men and feminism and when it helps or hinders when men sort of speak out on behalf of women.
Oh, I think it's really important to have men making that case too. And we launched the research with a panel at the London School of Economics. And I made sure that I did have a man on that panel, Ben Preston, who's our executive editor of news, executive editor of Sunday Times here, who runs the news desk, talking about the kind of male perspective. And he made a very powerful argument, which is the news desk is better, the stories are better if you have different kinds of people bringing them in. And you get different kinds of perspective on things, people find different stories interesting, and he's, you know, absolutely determined that that should be part of something that he does while he's here. So yeah, I think you have to have buy-in from men as well, because too much of the world at the moment is run by men, so if they're not inclined to buy into it, you're probably not going to get very far. So I do think you need to try and take some of them with you, but the fact that they disapprove shouldn't stop you speaking out.
But do you think it sometimes hinders if they try and speak out on behalf?
Depends how they do it. Okay. Not if it's done, you know, as part of a kind of broader spectrum. I mean, I think it can look massively patronising and backfire if they kind of go, oh yes, of course we need little ladies to run the women's page and tell us what fox and what we're going to be eating for supper. You know, I think that would be very counterproductive. But someone saying actually a kind of more diverse view on the input of the news creates better stories is fine. So I think it's really how it's done.
So the last thing I wanted to ask was to slightly flip the question on its head.
Sounds bad. Now I'm scared. What?
So I'm thinking of, like, you know, people like Jeremy Paxman or John Humphreys, you know, that sort of like bad tempered male.
A belligerent kind of, you know, answer the question. Right. So, Minister, did you?
Yes. So, because I often think people like that really get away with being basically rude and stuff.
And bullying.
Yeah. But I'm just wondering, is it necessarily bad that it's not okay for women or for anyone to call someone out that way? Like, do we need to change the culture of how we call people out instead of trying to emulate?
I understand what you're saying. I find in an interview actually one of the most powerful tools you have is silence. Is when you ask somebody a question, and I think women are really, I mean, I know I do this if I'm kind of a bit nervous, I kind of fill the space. You really don't want it to be silent, and particularly in an interview, because you can suddenly make it very awkward. But if you ask someone a question and then you just shut up, and then they've got to say something, most people will then move to fill that space. So I think rather than going, you know, you haven't answered the question, answer again. I mean, it's such a kind of broadcasting thing because it's all about the kind of rhetoric of the clip. But actually in real life, if you're doing that and you answer the question and you just shut up and wait for them to say something, that's actually often much more powerful than asking the question again. Yeah.
So a quick heads up, we started this episode by talking about Hillary Clinton and brought her up in that conversation as well. Now, the Sunday Times Magazine have just put out an exclusive interview with Hillary Clinton, and it was in this Sunday's edition. And Eleanor talks to her team about how they secured that on their podcast this week. We've linked to both the article and the podcast in the details for this show, so do check them both out. I totally echo a lot of what Eleanor says. It is harder for women to call people out, but that women can and should call people out, and that, yeah, backlash against someone who calls people out is also part of the territory of, you know, calling people out. I don't know, this topic is personally really fascinating for me because I'm pretty outspoken and not always in the most fair or effective way, I will admit to that, but being the type of woman who speaks up and calls people out is a bit of a double-edged sword. You end up courting a lot of anger, but also admiration, which Eleanor mentioned. Now, what's interesting is that I don't necessarily think that backlash is a bad thing. I mean, let's be clear, I'm not talking about abuse and disrespect and threats, you know, the sort of behaviour being aimed at BBC's Laura Koonsberg. That is wrong, and there's not a debate to be had about that. No one should talk to anyone else in such terms under any circumstances. It's always possible to disagree and to even discuss and debate passionately, but to respect others. But outside of that, let's dig a bit deeper because I don't think backlash is necessarily a bad thing. I often think that if people respond passionately to something you're doing, then that means that either you've hit a nerve or you've struck a chord. It means you've tapped into something deeper, something more essential, something more fundamental, and something that needs to be discussed and brought out into the open. And that is a really, really good thing. And like Eleanor says, you can also get a lot of really strong support as well, which is fantastic. Then we get to the point that a lot of women get backlash because of the very fact that they are women, rather than because what they're actually saying. A woman speaking out is basically a woman who is taking up space and is asking to be seen and heard. And that is threatening to a lot of people. And that dynamic that women should be submissive and not take up space needs to change. And it is changing. So on some level, being told to sit down and to be quiet because you're a woman, in some ways, that means you're doing the right thing and that you're rocking the boat and that things are changing. Now, I want to bring up a few lines from Moneyball, which is my favourite film. Now, I have watched this over 24 times and I am obsessed with it, and it really annoys my friends because I'm constantly going on about it, but it's brilliant. It's based on a book of the same name by Michael Lewis, who is also one of my favourite journalists, and it's about the baseball team, the Oakland A's, and their general manager, Billy Beane, who's played by Brad Pitt. Now, long story short, the Oakland A's didn't have a lot of money and weren't doing well and had just lost some of their star players to big teams. So Billy Beane tried a new method to select players for his team. And this method looked at statistics about players and was different to what scouts had been doing to select players until then. The Oakland A's assembled an unconventional team that ended up having a huge winning streak, and they almost won the league. But they lost in the end. Now, pundits criticised Billy Beane for thinking that he could change a system that had been in use for decades. In fact, Billy Beane's system actually soon became the dominant one. But there's a scene at the end where Beane gets a call from John Henry, the manager of the Boston Red Sox, who invites Beane to Boston. Beane visits Henry at Fenway Park, home of the Red Sox, and Henry offers him a job, and they talk about the backlash against Beane. We've linked to that scene and the details to the show, as well as the trailer, because this movie is awesome, so do watch them later, but John Henry says the following, quote, "I know you're taking it in the teeth out there, but the first guy through the wall, he always gets bloody. Always." This is threatening, not just to a way of doing business, but in their minds it's threatening the game. Really, what it's threatening is their livelihoods, it's threatening their jobs, it's threatening the way they do things. And every time that happens, whether it's in government, a way of doing business, or whatever it is, the people who are holding the reins have their hands on a switch. They go batshit crazy. End quote. That's one of my favourite quotes of all time, and one I remind myself of daily. The first guy through the wall, he always gets bloody. Always. Whenever you're calling someone out or speaking up, You're trying something different. You're taking a risk. You're being vulnerable. You're putting yourself out there. You're saying or doing something new, something that rocks the boat, and something that often others are thinking but can't say out loud. Whenever you do that, you'll face consequences. You'll put people out of their comfort zones, and some will appreciate it while others will feel threatened and will attack out of fear and defense. The first guy through the wall, he always gets bloody. Always. My take on it is to do what you've got to do and to wear that blood with pride. Now on to part two, transgender terminology. So a few weeks ago we had an episode asking, does clothing shape gender identity? One of our listeners got in touch to tell me that I kept using a term in error and that it was very problematic. Now, I will tell you off the bat, I put that episode off for several weeks because I was really worried that this would happen, that I'd get something wrong and it would be deeply offensive to someone's very identity. But we figured out that it's better to do something with the best intentions and trust that if you make a mistake, someone will respectfully correct you, rather than to avoid an issue entirely. Another quick tangent, I absolutely can't stand avoidance. I think it's one of the worst things in the world. Anyway, let's get back on track. I was really lucky as a listener got in touch and sent a really kind email about it. Here's Ash, who has said that it's okay for me to read out their message. Ash said, quote, "Hi Naz, I'm a fan of the show and I've been listening faithfully for a while now. I have found the subjects generally very interesting and I think it's good that more people are willing to have difficult conversations around gender. However, in the recent episode about clothing's effect on gender, a phrase kept coming up that was making me wince. It was born female. I know you never intend any offence and are working hard at being inclusive to trans and non-binary people. So I feel it important to reach out and to tell you why that's not a good phrase to use, and neither is its counterpart, born male. Trans and non-binary people are not born male or female. Saying that implies that we set out later in life to become something that we're not, that we're switching from one thing to another, which is simply not correct, and implicitly invalidates our knowledge, even if it's retroactive, that we have always been the gender we identify as. Similar to the reason it's best to say gender confirmation rather than sex change. As trans and non-binary people, we're not changing gender, we're affirming what we've always been." End quote. First off, thanks to Ash for being able to correct me in such an open and generous and trusting way. We really appreciate that. I gave Ash a call to find out more about this and about what terminology I should have been using instead. Now, Ash wanted me to make clear that they aren't an authority on the topic, and Ash was nervous about talking about this too, but I was still keen to get them on the show to explain more. Now, some background on Ash. Ash was assigned female at birth and is currently transitioning, and Ash considers themselves as transmasculine non-binary and uses the pronoun they. Ash explained why born female or born male is a problematic term. We had a bit of a nightmare with recording equipment, so we tried Skype as a last option, which was still also a little bit patchy, but we just about held it together. Here it goes.
It implies that changing from one gender to another rather than affirming the gender they've always been. A lot of trans people then come to the realisation that they've always been that gender, so assigned male or female at birth would be considered generally to be the more appropriate phrase, because it acknowledges that a trans person has always been the gender that they say they are.
When I was saying that this person was born female but now considers themselves non-binary, that makes it sound like I am saying they've kind of just made the decision that they're non-binary rather than they are non-binary and they were assigned something different. Is that right?
Yeah, a bit like that's kind of essentially, like, and I know that that's not the intention, but it does carry the implication that you actually think of them as female, but they are calling themselves non-binary. So it makes it sort of sound like a choice, join a subculture or something. Mm-hmm. It sort of makes it sound a little bit like it's not fundamental to their identity.
I want to know, are there other terms that people often use in error that are quite common that you hear and you're like, ooh, that's problematic?
Using the phrase preferred pronoun. It should just be pronoun. Sort of, again, implies a choice. It implies that a trans person doesn't need to be called the pronoun they asked to. It's just what they prefer, you know, it sort of trivializes it a bit. So instead, it's more useful just to know what their pronouns are, just take the preferred out of it and just have pronouns be pronouns.
I think at the start of this call, I think I asked you, what pronouns do you use? Is that problematic?
No, you asked, that was perfect.
Okay.
It's specifically the word prefer that makes it problematic because it implies...
It's like a lifestyle choice or like something...
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, exactly. That it does sound like a kind of like an optional thing rather than something that's integral to our identity.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, asking what pronouns do you use is perfectly fine. That's the correct way to do it.
Big thanks to Ash for that. And on to the final part, some podcasts we want to give a shout out to. So The Gender Knot is all about untangling the new masculinity and femininity. We see The Gender Knot as being a podcast which explores ideas and also a podcast where we look at the news of the day through the lens of gender. So there are two podcasts we want to recommend to you that fall into each one of these categories. The first one is Ministry of Ideas. This has been just released and I am insanely excited about it. In fact, a little bit of bragging, I had the honour of hearing a few episodes before it was released. And so I've been walking around for the past few weeks with this huge secret that I've been wanting to tell people. And that is that one of the best things I've ever heard is about to be released into the world. And now it's out there and I'm so excited that all of you get to hear it. It's seriously incredible. Anyway, so this is a podcast exploring some of the most fascinating ideas of our times. It's based out of Boston and it's hosted by Zach Davis. And some of the themes include looking at the interplay between politics and comedy and what happens when the court jester becomes the king, as well as exploring the fascination with efficiency and the relationship between race and class in America. And also they have some fantastic guests. It's an all-round fantastic podcast and you need to check it out. That's the Ministry of Ideas. And the other podcast we want to give a shout out to is Badass Women's Hour. Three fantastic female hosts discuss the issues of the day with guests. And it's smart, it's topical, and it's really fun as well. They also have a segment called Backdated Badass, where guests talk about a woman in history who they think is super cool. I was on this week's episode talking about Joan of Arc. We had a fun chat about her audacity and her overall awesomeness. And comedy actress Harriet Thorpe was the main guest. Badass Women's Hour is generally a fantastic show and we highly recommend it. And we'll also be having one of the hosts, Emma Sexton, on The Gender Knot soon. So we're excited about that. We've linked to both of these podcasts, so go subscribe to them now. Okay, we're back next Monday and we've got some cool guests coming up over the next few weeks. We're going to be speaking to DeRay McKesson of Black Lives Matter, who also hosts the fantastic podcast Pod Save the People, out on Crooked Media. We're speaking to Mark Manson, the self-help superstar and author of the book The Subtle Art of Not Giving a... I'm trying to swear less in public so you can fill in the rest. And the rapper and poet Disraeli will also be a guest. He and I are cooking up something really special right now. So we're super excited about all that's coming up. This episode was hosted by me. I'm Nastaran Tavakoli-Farr, or simply Naz, and it was co-produced by the super cool Katie Vogue. As always, we're at thegenderknot.com, and you can also get in touch at thegenderknot@gmail.com. Please do leave us a review on iTunes, and we'll be back next week. Speak to you then.
Some brands offer you low finance, or cashback, or servicing.
Renault don't do ors. We do ands. The Renault Kadjar, with 1.91% APR and €1,000 cashback and 3 years servicing, saving you thousands. Renault, the brand with the ands. Visit your local Renault dealer. Finance is made under a hire purchase agreement. Terms and conditions apply. Deposit required, subject to lending criteria. See Renault.ie.